Welcome to another edition of Barrel to Bottle with Binny's Beverage Depot. I'm Jeff Carl, and of course, as always, Kristen Ellis from Binny's here to teach me everything I need to know about wine, spirits, and then some. Kristen, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. We got a very special show today, don't we?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
What's on the docket?
We've got a master somm with us today. Really special chance to ask all the questions you've ever wanted to a master sommelier.
I'm raring to go. Who is our special guest?
Who are you?
Hello, it's Fernando Beteta, Master Sommelier. Thank you for having me today, Kristen, Jeff. Very excited to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you. I like your jacket.
I dressed for the occasion. I always wear a pin, a double Windsor tie, the hipster socks. You can see them. You can picture my hair is combed very neatly.
Where's your mustache?
My mustache is currently waxed in upward. So, like, you know, picture of a sommelier. You got a picture of someone in your mind? That's exactly what I look like, and I dress for it.
Well, and you dress very well, my friend.
That's a nice ascot. It's touching.
Yes, and I'll remove the double Windsor tie and wear the bow tie in the middle of the segment.
Does it have polka dots?
No.
I'm not interested then.
Stripes.
Nope. It must have polka dots. I have a question. You said picture sommelier. A lot of people kind of don't really know how to define that role. So could you give us a short kind of... definition of what you do.
I think that's sort of what I wanted to say. It's like when I pictured a sommelier, I pictured a stuffy wine expert in a dining room who knew everything about wine and was just really intimidating to talk to. But today's sommelier is just very different. I think somebody that's supposed to help you select the wine to go with your meal, who has maybe the knowledge, but also just has hospitality. So I've always worked in restaurants, and it's been my mom, my dad, it's been the restaurant mentors who taught me about service. And then when I got into wine, I just pictured the same thing. It should be somebody that you trust, right, and that can kind of understand your palate.
So the sommelier, kind of in my world, is the person that is the bridge between the chef's creations and the wine list. And their job is to sort of link those two together for you at the table. Do you think that that's correct?
Absolutely. I think one of the best analogies I heard is that you're like a broker, an artist broker, because you may be willing to invest in art, but you just don't know. So you put your like trust into, you know, an expert and says, you know, you have to buy this. This is $22 million. Similar to a restaurant wine list that you see these wines that are $200, $400, $1,000. And that person needs to be able to understand what you like and what's a good value and whether it's worth collecting and holding on to or drink now and, you know, enjoy it.
So you work as a somm, and it's quite a prestigious, you know, situation to be in, but you're still working in a restaurant. So there's got to be some crazy stuff that happens.
Well, often it would be just at the very beginning of the experience when the language barrier or the wine list was too daunting for some people. And I worked with a wine list that had 50, 60 pages sometimes. And you'd hand them this big book. And then they take a look. You come back 5 minutes later, and then, you know, the host would just casually look at it and say, "I'll have the Bordeaux." And then he points to it and says 17. You know, you think, oh, that's the page number of the table of contents. So he's just looking at the table of contents. He's 50 different regions, and he assumes that's the wine list and the page is the price, and he went to 17. But you get stuff like that all the time. The situation in a restaurant is very quick. You have a server talking to you, you have somebody else pouring you water, they're ready to take, maybe you've had a cocktail.
Right.
And you're a master somm, so how long did it take you to get to that level?
So the master sommelier diploma is over 40 years old, and in its history, there's only been around 230 in the world. I was the 99th person to pass in North America in 2009. So it was just a very difficult exam. It has many different levels. You don't have to do it, but I say that the four levels are introductory, certified, obsessed, enraged, and then uncontrollable sobbing. Because there is more people that have probably failed the exam than have passed it, right? There's like a 3% pass rate. So it's somebody who's very... you know, engaged and also committed to passing this exam. So I got into it because I think my paths in my life, I lived in Europe, I worked in many restaurants, I had four languages under my belt. I thought this is a path that I should just pursue to become an expert in sommeliers. But for other people, their path is different. They don't have a clear path to get there because there is no school. There is no like sign me up and I'm going to take a class on Tuesday. You pretty much show up, take this very difficult exam, blind taste wines that can be from anywhere in the world, and you have to just, you smell them, and you have to tell them the grape, the country, the region, the appellation, and the vintage. So imagine how many wines I have to drink. I drink a lot of wine.
Life is hard.
And a lot of spirits, and a lot of beers, and a lot of smoked cigars, and you had to do everything else.
So when you sit down for the blind tasting, you could have potentially a flight of spirits and a flight of beers. Is that normal?
Well, you paid for it, so this is the most expensive flight, yes, and you drink all of it.
Yeah.
But it's okay, you picture you walk into a room, you have the judges who are master sommeliers, and they'll have a flight of six wines, three whites, three reds, and you have 25 minutes. So you have to talk, it's all oral, and you have to say what you smell, if there's oak, if there's minerals, if it has high sugar or high acid, and then they take the points, and they'll never tell you what the wines are.
There's no buzzer when you get it
there's
wrong.
There's no buzzer. There's this trap door in the bottom. It's like, that's exactly how I felt, like, because I took this exam four times, and my Achilles heel was the blind tasting. So you just have to come back and wait a year and taste more wines, and 1 year it can be like dry German wines. Another year it has some oddballs from South Africa and some interesting grapes from Canada. They can do any wine in the world, so you have to really kind of broaden your palate.
So how many hours a week would you dedicate to studying for this exam?
Besides the 12 hours a day that I was working in a restaurant,
that's
what I mean. So if you're not working in a restaurant, having sort of the interaction with customers, ordering wines and buying wines during the day, you usually get tired. By the time you get home, your brain is like, I want to think of something else. Like, I want to watch Game of Thrones and binge on
it. Right.
Last thing you want to do is pick up this big encyclopedia, but you need another 2 hours. Maybe an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening, and then a couple hours on the weekend. And then I spent my vacations traveling to wine regions and any living moment open to learn.
So you've got to be a bit crazy to want to be a master sommelier.
Every master sommelier that you can meet is crazy. Certified. They have some obsession.
Certified
crazy
master
about
crazy.
Wine.
They are certified master.
Around 800 AD, Emperor Charlemagne's wife hated how red wine stained her husband's white beard. So she ordered white grapes be planted in the vineyards in Burgundy on what is now known as the Grand Cru Vineyard called Courton Charlemagne.
So when you passed, did they tell you that you passed immediately? How did that work?
Well, The results, if you've ever seen the documentary Somme, it shows a quick glimpse.
I always say it's grown men crying over wine. It's not sexy at all.
Uncontrollable sobbing. You're like hugging somebody and then you see somebody with tears. You don't know if you should congratulate them or just stay away because they've put so many hours and
And you've been on both sides of that too. You've been on the fail and the pass side.
Yeah,
so
you don't want to sometimes see some of these people you've mentored and have to give them bad results, so that they have to wait or they have to resit the exam. But basically, it's whoever was there for maybe the 3 days of your exams and saw every part to sit with you and immediately give you feedback. And one of the notorious things about the Cour Master Sommelier is that it's very secretive. They never share or publish the exam. They never reveal the wine, so they never told me what they were. And I guess you just kind of feel if you pass or you didn't during the service, how many times you had to apologize. I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm sorry. And they're like, oops. But I think there's a feeling they take all the points and then they sit down and talk with you. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, work on Hungary, work on your regions of, Willamette Valley that you didn't maybe answer. You knew that in the exam, but then when you go about to talk about the wines, they'll say the same, like, you should taste more oaked wines with age. You should probably think of New World, Old World, classic grapes. Maybe thinking, for me, it was, did I confuse that Pinot Noir from Burgundy and that Pinot Noir from Russian River Valley?
Mm-hmm.
That happens to me all the time. That's how one grape can taste pretty much the same, but once you start getting those nuances, they may seem similar, but they also have these very clear opposite like profiles.
Do you feel that you are very strong in geography because of your background in wine?
My geography teacher in high school would not believe it.
I know. I feel the same way.
History buffs. Like, I just met a parent from my daughter's school who teaches high school history. I said, we need to sit down and go through the 18th and 19th century because I'm talking about wine all the time, and I always start about picture France, 1855, Napoleon III request. It's so amazing, like, to kind of look at the history books and put them together with how wine and what
in
why
the
it's
context
there today.
Of wine, yeah.
And you see, oh, you hear all those champagne names like Roederer and Krug and Bollinger that have German last names, and then you kind of go back in history. So I think I learned a lot about history through wine, and I'm also looking at maps and revisiting every river and every mountain range of Europe just because it's so important to viticulture.
Right. So, Jeff, wine makes you smart.
Apparently. Or you have to be smart to really, really like wine.
Well, to do this.
Do this,
yeah.
Right, at this level.
After 12 glasses of wine, I don't feel the same as the beginning, so I might...
Well, you're on 11 right now, and you sound fantastic. So
I have to.
Don't worry. Yeah. So we were talking the other day, Fern and I, about... can I call you Fern? I think I can.
You can call me Fern.
About, you know, people ask you the best, you know, wine to buy when your child is born. This is a big trend, is to buy the wine of the year, the vintage.
Your birth year.
Yeah. So what are some no-brainer wines for
no-brainer wines? Riesling. German Riesling can age for decades. So you obviously want to have something that's going to hold off. So the idea is to buy a birth year wine and drink it in 20 plus years, right? So it's not... California Cabernets with some oak, so you know, Cabernet Sauvignons, dark skin grapes, Bordeaux from France. These are the collectibles. I wish my parents would have saved the wine for me, but I was born in 1976. It says my age, but I want to change my birth year to a better vintage.
I was born in 82.
Oh, you see, you have a great vintage, but
there's
very
none
expensive.
Left. It's exactly
76 is a terrible vintage.
I have an 83 bottle of Chianti.
Yeah. So good luck with that. Yeah. keep that on the mantle, and one day, like, open it, you know, at somebody's. But that's what I collected some German Riesling for my daughter, and well, the 2016 vintage for my son is not really out yet, but I hope to maybe find something, you know, something worth
aging.
You'll
be good with Bordeaux. I mean, killer vintage.
Yeah,
so.
You don't have to buy a lot, but buy Barolo, something that's $100, because these wines are, you know, they're tested and tried that they can age.
Right.
Don't experiment with, you know, something like Sauvignon Blanc with no oak. It's going to be, you know, brown in 2 years.
So we're looking for wines that've got good acid and good tannin to let them ride through the decades.
And also, like, in 20 years, you want to open something that is appreciating value. Don't get something that's cheap. Get something with some, you know, worth it. So it'd be a nice gift.
Okay. Good advice. Yeah. Any other questions, Jeff, for you?
Yeah, question for you. So someone just getting into the Somme game, if that's what they call it. They call it that.
They do now.
What's an advice for somebody who's like, you know what, I'd love to get more into this?
Well, for sommeliers, you have to work in a restaurant. So get with a restaurant group or somebody that's passionate that has a wine program. So you know you're going to be working with some great wines and on a daily basis. You know, not necessarily a beer and a bar cocktail place, but a wine bar. And then you can visit many different websites that teach and build community. My favorite is guildsomme.com, which is a community. It's about 8,000 people that are in this program. And then there's different educational groups. The one I did was the Court of Master Sommelier, but it may not be the best to learn. Something like the WSET is much better program. So you can take one academic route, so you learn your theory, and then you get on the floor and you work and you pop bottles of wine every single day and corks and come home, you know, with a jacket and purple stains around, you know, your clothing like I did. And that's how you become a sommelier.
Cool. I do WSET, Jeff. So that's kind of where Fernando and I are different, is he does the sommelier certifications and I do the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. So
excellent.
One's not better than the other, just different. But Master Somme obviously is
the most difficult exam.
Exactly.
Cabernet Sauvignon is a cross of Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc. It's a happy accident, likely taking place in the 17th century in southwestern France, most likely in Bordeaux. Now, Cabernet, along with Merlot, is one of the most widely planted red grapes in the world.
All right. As we wrap another edition of Barrel to Bottle with Binny's Beverage Depot, we can't go without our Q&A. Kristen,
we can't.
What do we got this
week?
We're
here. So we've got Chloe from LaGrange, and she wanted to know, Fern, when she buys a bottle of wine at a restaurant, and let's say the table is four or five people, they've had a couple of glasses each, half a bottle left, and they decide they don't like the wine. They kind of want to return it. I mean, is that cool? What do they do?
Oh, Chloe, what's wrong with your wine? Was it her fault or that she didn't enjoy it? Or is it if the wine is off? Because sometimes this is the big question. We're not sure. We doubt. So we have either the manager or somebody taste it. If the sommelier tasted it and he found out that wine is, that's the style. That happens a lot with maybe Riesling. They weren't sure it was going to be sweet. Then it's okay maybe to share the wine or bring it back to your babysitter if you have something. I always have picked wines that I don't finish, and I find somebody that will have it.
Right.
But if you do need to, then talk to the somm and explain why you don't like it, if there's something that is different than what you have, so that you can make sure that the next bottle that they come and they recommend is going to be to your liking. And then they could possibly use that wine for by the glass, or use it for a tasting, or give it to the chef. A restaurant's not going to lose a lot on half a bottle. And I think the correct thing would do is to still leave a tip to your server for having to run around and get you all the glassware.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, just a normal maybe offer to pay for whatever the wine, if it was sound.
So, yeah. So if the wine is off, so if it smells like feet or cardboard or nail polish or any of these things,
Band-Aids,
then you can give that horse wine back, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if it's sound, like you said, but you just don't like it, it's not really cool to return it. Just be charitable and give it to somebody else.
Sometimes people return wine to me just because they didn't like it, but the wine was exactly how it's supposed to taste.
Right.
So I would watch if I recommended it or if they had just picked it off the list because the name sounded fun.
So Chloe's got a gift card coming her way.
You're right. So because, Chloe, your question was chosen, we're going to send a $20 gift card out to you to spend with us here at Benny's Beverage Depot. So thanks so much, Chloe, for participating. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you want to have your question up for consideration, check us out on Twitter at Benny's Bev. Throw us a question, and we'll see if we can use it. And the $20 gift card could be yours.
Perfect. Thanks, Jeff. That's right. Fernando, you are wonderful. Thank you for coming
in
today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And dropping some serious knowledge for us. We appreciate it.
Fernando, if we want to find you on social media and whatnot, where do we find you?
Easy, at Fernando Beteta.
That doesn't sound as easy as you think it is. Spell that for us.
FERNANDOBETETA.
Just like it sounds.
Exactly. Give me your ETA. All right, Fernando. Thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Another episode of Barrel to Bottle with Binney's Beverage Depot. I'm Kristen, my co-host Jeff. Keep tasting. See you next time.